Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 29, where we talk about How to Train Your Dragon 2. We get Hiccup, we get Toothless, we get Stoic, and the whole gang, basically, for this sequel. The big talk was, would it live up to the acclaim of the first How to Train Your Dragon movie? And some people think it exceeded it, some people think it didn't quite reach that height, but overall, whether you know where you fell on the spectrum, almost everyone enjoyed it who went to see it. Helping me break that movie down is my wife, Laura, who's, if you're familiar with the show, you know she's on fairly often. She's nerdy, she's a writer, she keeps me in line, and she always has something great to bring to the show. Also, a regular of the podcast, Griffin, who is our resident comic guy, but recently saw the first How to Train Your Dragon and was so excited about how much he loved it and how much he loves animated movies in general that he wanted to come on and do this one as well. So we have him here. We have a great talk. It's really awesome to do animated movies. I wish we did more animated movies, but for some reason, maybe it's just my perspective, but I feel like we haven't had as many really good animated movies over the past couple years as we have in years past, or like previous years to that. You know, we get a Toy Story 3, we get a How to Train Your Dragon, and in between that, I mean, you could say a Frozen, but, you know, I don't really think it's popular, but I don't really think it's quite the quality of like a Toy Story 3 or a How to Train Your Dragon. You can talk about the Lego movie. We probably should have talked about the Lego movie, and I just dropped the ball on that one. But, you know, animated movie, kind of something different. Either way, wish we could talk about it more. Glad we had a chance to talk about it. But this movie opens up tons of stuff. Hiccup's character's growing. We talk about his relationships, all the relationships in the movie. There's lots of very deep themes, lots of humor. It's beautiful, and we really enjoy ourselves. We even talk about Comic-Con as a complete tangent. So stick with us and enjoy episode 29, How to Train Your Dragon 2 and Developing Relationships. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
I'm assuming you're recording now?
Yes.
I'm glad.
I needed to see if it was going to work, because yeah, I had to switch up all the settings since everyone's in studio.
Oh, hey, we're all in studio. We're all here. By the way, this is Griffin. because Mikey's not going to introduce me later because we don't do that anymore, the big introductions
we,
and stuff
we don't,
like that.
We don't do that.
And you want to make sure
I want to make sure people know who I am. Exactly. Yeah. Why wouldn't I? I mean, like, hey, like, I'm here. I'm taking time out of my busy, busy schedule. No, it really is. This week is, like, ridiculous.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Johnson City next week for, like, a conference, like, retreat thing for a church in Greensboro.
Because you're playing?
Because I'm playing. I'm leading worship, and it's going to be a fun time. I love kids and hanging out. Like, not in the weird way. Like, in the total, like, platonic, we're friends way.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. Just in case you guys were all concerned.
There is some controversy going around right now.
There's a lot. So. Not with Griffin, though. So I'm going there, but, like, it's like I had to cram everything that I would have done next week in Greensboro into this week and try to go to Heroes Con on Saturday. Mm. So that's where I'll be on Saturday is Heroes Con in Charlotte, which I'm really excited about.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I thought since you said you were leaving on Sunday that you were not going to go to Heroes Con, but you're just going one day.
I'm going for Saturday, just on Saturday, yeah, because there's a couple guys that I want to see and that I haven't actually ever met before, and they're going to be there, so I want to go see them, and then couple of, like, just some people that I want to meet up with, and so.
What you can't find your book, can you?
I can't find my book.
Do you want something signed?
I'm sorry,
No, Laura rearranged all these shelves, and I can't find the book that I always use to prop up my computer to make sure the heat, it doesn't get too hot while we're recording, and so I just...
It's gotta be on one of those two-layer shelves.
It's not that big of a deal. We'll just have to keep
from Hell. From Hell's not the best Adam Moore book, so just grab that.
No, well, it's not ours. I'm borrowing it.
Oh. How long have you been borrowing that? I've seen that has been in your house the entire time I've known you.
I think he told us we could keep it because he doesn't like it.
Oh, yeah, he said it disturbed him, so he wasn't...
It's disturbing. Yeah. Eddie Campbell, man, that guy. Well, Alan Moore and Eddie Campbell, that's like a duo right there. So anyways.
Well, I was going to say, I really wanted to read it. It's just a matter of
I don't read like lots of things at the same time, so I'm looking at the thickness of From Hell.
It's pretty big,
and I'm like, when am I going to sit down and read all of this without being able to read anything else?
Yeah, and the way Alan Moore writes, it's going to be like it's a novel with some pictures involved.
Yeah, I'm not going to just like, you know, pick it up and be like, oh, I'll just come back to this because it's so easy to get back into.
Yeah.
You know, or at least I'm not expecting that.
Yeah, I tried to do that with Watchmen. I remember that. Like, whenever I first started comics, everybody always tells you you have to read Watchmen, which is not really true. You don't have to. You can read it eventually. It's usually good to, like, know and enjoy comics before you get into it because I feel like that's such an intense one.
I was going
to
say it's...
I tried to read it, like, really, like, an issue here and there and never knew what was going on. By the time I got to the end, I was like, what in the world happened?
Well, it's really... It's a lot tougher because he keeps doing the Lost at Sea. That's not what it's called.
Like, all the little interludes. Yeah,
the interludes.
The Black Trade... Or Black...
What is
it's
it?
It's been, like, two years.
So, whatever that thing is where he keeps going to, the story inside the story. And so, it keeps taking you out of the story.
It's Hollis Mason's, like, story. It's like his... It's like his auto bio about the people who he's working with.
Yeah,
but
okay. So when you go to HeroesCon, what are you expecting on Saturday? Like,
It's gonna be packed. I mean, the thing about Heroes started out as like kind of a pretty small show, and you kind of like could see it's gonna be packed. And that's the great thing about Heroes now is, I mean, comics in general now, it's a huge market, and there are a lot of new fans. It's awesome. It's really great. But Saturday, what I'm really expecting, I'm going to get there as like doors open just because I want to try to get in and out as quickly as possible and try to get everything I feel like I needed to get done. And I'm going with a couple of guys who've never been to a show before. So I'm kind of like getting my stuff done so I can go like sit at a bar and drink a beer while they kind of get their thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm expecting though is there's a couple of people that I want to grab some prints from and talk to. And then there's just a couple artists that I want to meet and just, you know, maybe get a book signed. So, not a lot. I'm not expecting a lot. But, you know, there are some things that I like. I love getting books signed that I like, that I'm going to keep forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one that gets a book signed and then goes and sells it on eBay.
Yeah.
But, like, they're like, if you come in my house, I have a bookshelf of hardcovers mostly and some paperbacks. And that stuff is stuff that, like, I will probably keep forever because I don't buy hardcovers, paperbacks if I don't, like, love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to, like... Basically, artists who I haven't met before that are going to be at the show this weekend. I'll take all my books with me and get them all signed.
Well, and HeroesCon in Charlotte is still mainly comics.
Oh, it's entirely
comics. It's entirely comics.
If you're thinking, like, people talk about Comic-Con and they think, oh, I can go see a Firefly regathering there.
Yeah.
It's not. HeroesCon is not for non-comics fans. It is straight up, like, it for creators. Creators talk about it being their favorite East Coast show because it is a show... For creators.
Yeah, like, they're not getting lost in the show.
There's like
mediums.
A couple, like you're going to have like maybe, you know, 10 stores set up that are comic book stores that are selling comics, and then maybe a couple like t-shirt vendors. But like 95% of it is creators of comics. And so, you know, that's like, it's not a show for like, I want to go to Comic-Con and see Shelton and the guys from Big Bang. Like,
yeah,
no. That's San Diego. And that's one of my friends is going to San Diego and he was like, oh, should I go to Heroes with you guys weekend? I'm like, you're not, like, I know you and you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just going to be very boring to you because, like, it's meant for people who consistently read and love comics and want to meet the people who made the comics.
Right.
So, now that we have Laura and I have redoubled our efforts to become comic readers,
next year I'll take you guys.
We'll go with you, and then Marshall
keeps telling me to go to talk to writers, and I guess I don't really know.
Well, specific writers,
because my friend Zach's going to be there. Like, I know lots of people who go to Heroes.
Yeah.
And
it's a great show.
So,
yeah.
But everyone I know who goes either writes comics or, like, they don't just read comics occasionally.
Yeah.
They're like you, and I don't say that in a derogatory way. They're like, they're really, like, they know their stuff.
Well, and I don't even suggest people go to shows like that, especially like Heroes, if they just, like, occasionally read comics, unless they're literally going to meet one artist and read.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it's also kind of an experience, too, to kind of. It gets a lot of people interested in stuff they would never be interested in before. There's a concept at shows called Artist Alley, which is basically like indie creators, people who aren't doing stuff for Big Two, Marvel, you know, DC stuff, or even Image. They're kind of making their own books, mini comics, that sort of thing. And I've gotten more into comics by going and like walking around Artist Alley, seeing what people are putting out there and saying, this is my work. and you know, I'll bring enough money to like spend some money on that stuff, mm-hmm. even if it's stuff that I don't know that I'm gonna like. I'm like, I'll give you $5 and see if I like it, and
yeah.
you know, at least give it a whirl. And I think that's part of that too, is like, it's also a mindset of mine that I'm like, I want people to make more comics so that way it works like, you know, the TV and movie industry does, that the good stuff rises to the top. That there's a lot going on, there's a big saturation, but the best stuff rises to the top, and there's a lot of great creators getting opportunities to work. Because otherwise, I mean, there's a lot of indie creators I know that have never gotten work at Big Two because no one reads their stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, sooner or later, they'll get found, and that'll be great for them. But
it'll be great for you because you'll have the original.
Well, I'm also glad some of them don't, because I'm like, I like what you're doing here more than you would be doing there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I like you writing this book about like historically accurate like families in like really interesting parts of history, mm-hmm. than you going to work for Marvel and writing a Superman story. I mean, you know, writing a story about the Avengers or X-Men or mm-hmm. some stupid character I don't really particularly love.
Yeah. Well, oh man, I want to talk about this other thing too, but we're going to have to skip it. Yeah, I have to ask you offline.
Offline, we'll talk about it post show.
So, not only do you love comics,
yeah.
but you are a very big fan of animated movies.
Oh my god, love it! Like, so, I have every Pixar movie except for Ratatouille's on the way. Ratatouille's on the way. It's been except for Ratatouille for a long time. It's not my favorite Pixar movie, but it's on the way. I love it. I mean, yeah, Miyazaki. I mean, there are very few creators that I'm not like, I love.
So give me like, and it doesn't have to be the perfect list, but give me like the top three, your favorite animated films.
I love WALL-E, and I know a lot of people say like, oh, like I love like the first 15 minutes, and then after that I can
take
it or leave
it. It's more than 15 minutes. It's like,
the first 30 minutes, take it or leave it. I love WALL-E. I think like from top to bottom, that's a really interesting story. And it's probably one of my favorite like movies, that has been done in general, much less like animated stuff. Kiki's Delivery Service is like a classic. I grew up like, I don't know how my family got a hold of this, but like we owned every Disney movie and then Kiki's Delivery Service on VHS. I never understood why, like growing up, I was like, or after I was like older, I was like, why did my parents buy that? But I loved it. And so that kind of got me into Miyazaki and really like his stuff. I've got to say Fantastic Mr. Fox, just because it's Wes Anderson, and I think that claymation is the best medium for him. I think that his movies and his ideas work perfectly in claymation, that like even for me, like Gumby doesn't even even do, like it doesn't even meet, because I just, it's such a cool concept, the way that he puts it out there, and he still uses humor and like the whole like every cuss word is like said like what the cuss, or like cuss you man,
yeah,
get the cuss out of here, and so like I love like that humor and stuff like that. So those, and then like and definitely kind of a runner-up, How to Train Your Dragon. I actually just watched the first one, like I guess it was like a few months ago, it wasn't even that long ago. And I watched it, and I was like, oh my god, that's why people love this movie. It was
the first time you saw it.
Yeah, it's the first time I saw it. First time I ever saw it was like a few months ago, and I was like, man, this is a really, it's a fun movie, and it's like got such a great story, so many great like moral like endings and stuff like that. And that's, yeah, I was really impressed, and I think that's why, like, whenever you called me and you're like, hey, you want to go see this movie on Saturday, I was like, sure.
Yes,
hey,
I
you
do.
Want to talk about it? Yes. Yes, I love to do those things. Because I like getting animated. I love talking about animated.
Well,
so.
You jumped ahead a little bit, because I was going to say, well, compared to that list, and you know, I know you're a huge Pixar fan.
Yeah.
Obvious by the Pixar marathon that you had.
Yeah.
So, well, not that the audience would know that, but you had a Pixar marathon. I was like, this dude loves animated movies, and I'm cool with that because I love animated movies. I think animated movies tend to actually try way harder than live action movies,
yeah.
lots of times, especially nowadays when you find a good one.
Because it's funny, because animated movies have to walk the perfect line of being accessible. Well, the best ones walk the perfect line of being really accessible for kids, really easy for them to understand, and also, like, you and I are sitting here talking about how much we love them.
Oh,
and I'm, as much as I act like a kid reading comics and stuff like that, I'm an adult. Like, I pay my own bills.
I am
and
an adult.
I buy cereal at Food Lion, okay? I know I'm an adult here. So,
but are they Fruit Loops?
I don't eat Fruit Loops. It's Honeycombs, actually. Like an adult.
Like an adult.
Well, also, I think animated films can can stretch the mind maybe a little bit more because people are more willing to say, like, oh, yeah, balloons could lift an entire house.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they are able to do things that...
Well, they can, but okay, whatever.
Well, like, I think that, yeah.
Because... Way to be an adult, Mikey.
That's right.
Yeah, downer. well, like, you know, it's cool because with animated movies, we suspend our beliefs more than we do with, like, Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. And because mm-hmm. for that movie, it's like, they're real people, but, like, I know that that's effects.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I know that those aliens aren't real. But with anime movies, like, I tend to suspend my belief even more than I would yeah. with, like, something with, like, Harry Potter in the movies or something like that.
Well, I think that's why, even though I don't like it as much as people probably say you should like it, but I thought the concept of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like, when it came out, like, it took these two worlds, and as a viewer, like, I'm really conflicted because I'm like, okay, this is the real world, so only certain things can happen. But then they, you know, they're introducing cartoons where you automatically, like you're saying, subconsciously just suspend disbelief.
Or like Space Jam.
Or Page Master. Like, can we, after this, can we have like a little post show where we just talk about all like the anime movies we love? Like one of my favorite Disney movies is, actually my favorite Disney movie is definitely going to be the original Robin Hood. With Robin Hood and Little John,
movie?
By far that music is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Oh. Robin Hood and Little John are walking through the forest. Oh well, my gosh, so
that's
great!
A good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so Laura, what are some of your top favorite animated movies?
You did not prepare me for this.
I know, but I asked Griffin first, and I tried to give you like the signal, like you're going.
But I was listening. I wasn't thinking.
No one listen. We don't listen. We talk.
Yeah, we just process and go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. She's a girl.
You don't actually have to do like a top three, but just like some of your favorite animated movies besides.
I say, this isn't like this isn't be all end all. I'm not gonna make fun of you about this afterwards.
We're not gonna post this online and say Laura Fissel says these are the best three animated movies, and if you disagree,
no, like off the top of your head, top three, like just it can change tomorrow, but like
we're spitballing here. We're spitballing.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm gonna say my top three, but maybe I can come up with some that I enjoy.
Okay.
I really like Toy Story. Robin Hood was my favorite Disney movie for a long time. Actually, it was kind of tied with Sleeping Beauty.
Mm.
And when we were talking about Maleficent, I was trying to remember why I liked it so much. I think it's the art and the music, and it feels really different to me than a lot of other animated films. What else do I like? I love The Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, that,
I love that
so
movie.
It's so funny. That
it's
is
hilarious.
Like one of the, that's the cool thing about some of these animated films too, because they made me laugh much more than a lot of like comedy in the movies today.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard. I'm kind of sick whenever it comes to like humor.
Yeah,
so I like stand up and animated films, and there's not much like 22 Jump Street ain't gonna get it for me. And so I realize that a lot of people are really loving on that movie right now.
Yeah,
but it's probably I'd probably go see it and be like,
nah.
Yeah,
you know. So.
Well, no, because I think we talked about this in one of the guest episodes we did for another podcast on like Anglophiles, and how for some reason like British comedies just really do it for me, and American comedies tend to, I mean, they have to be exceptional,
yeah,
for me to really enjoy them. So there, I mean, there is a difference there, and I think the same. There's a like difference in the comedy you typically get in a cartoon,
yeah,
or an animated. I'm sorry, I want to say cartoon, well, an animated film,
because it's more. I think it's more universal, and it's usually a lot less like zingers. It's like a lot of American comedy is more like zingers. It's like
or shock,
yeah. Whereas like the animated comedy is more like it's universal, like funny
and nuanced. Like it's usually a combination of like facial expressions, and you know there are a lot of other ways that it's communicated.
Yeah, and it's funny. How to Train Your Dragon 2 was one of the first ones where like I felt like some of the awkwardness of the characters in animated film that I don't normally get. Like I felt like the actual like life nuances of a movie that I don't normally get in animated films.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because like the main character kind of stumbles over his words some, and he like kind of makes these really funny faces that like it's clear that he's like trying to get something out but he can't. and that was a cool thing for me, because I don't normally feel that from animated films, but I really did. Like this was one of those ones that I was really impressed by the way that that like they got this across, and they didn't get it across like that in the first one, I don't think.
Well let's use that to go ahead and I guess specifically shift to talking about How to Train Your Dragon 2. And I'll frame this slightly like I frame everyone, we're going to talk spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie, I'm glad you're listening, but you should probably see the movie before you see this. Or you can just watch the trailer, since the trailer spoiled most of the good stuff anyway. Yeah. But
except for the giant dragon fight at the
end. And we just said spoilers, so that was okay.
But were they dragons? I don't know. We'll get to that.
Well, whatever. But the...
I can't tell.
How to Train Your Dragon finds our main character, Hiccup, struggling with his identity and his future as the eventual heir to his father, Stoic, as chief of Berk. Hopefully, like I said, you've seen the original, so you have some context for what those things are. But he mainly just wants to explore with his friend, his dragon, his best friend, Toothless. And on one of their adventures, they discover an ice cave that's home to hundreds of new wild dragons and a mysterious dragon rider. Eventually, they find themselves at the center of a battle to protect the peace between dragons and the villain of the movie, Drogo, and Berk.
Is it Drogo or Drago?
Drago.
I thought that was interesting to me.
It was so close.
It was so close, and I didn't really like that. I wish they'd have given him a different name.
No, I think it's Drago.
Because it wasn't the same.
It was Drogo.
Is it?
Well, I feel like they said it differently.
Okay.
Because I was like, if they're gonna call him Drogo, he's gonna be like the call. Well, that's gonna. That was a different character.
But that was the thing. They kept saying, "Arnor Drago." I'm like, was that a name in there somewhere? You know, so. But anyway, so there he's the protective piece.
Yeah.
So with that, we've kind of already touched on this. Well, we have to wait for Laura to find this now. IMDb. Come on.
Hey, it's spelled with an A.
Yes. Drago?
Drago.
According to Wikipedia, which is the ultimate source on all knowledge.
So depending on what part of America you're from, he's either Drago or Drago.
Drago.
Hey, Drago?
Hey, Drago.
Hey, Drago. So... Like I said, we've kind of already hit on this, but Griffin, so did you enjoy the movie?
Yes, I definitely did. And as I've kind of already mentioned, or maybe mentioned before the show started officially, I can't remember.
It depends.
But I liked it. I didn't like it as good as the first one, or as much as the first one.
As good.
I didn't like it as good as the first one. The first one was a lot better. But
now Drago might have liked it more.
Yeah, but I didn't like it as well as the first one. I think part of that was just like the first one was such a great world building like exercise, and it was so impressive to me how quickly I like grew to love that world in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, it was just like telling another story in that world. I think that's kind of like for me. Well, it's not really true for that one, but I'm going to carry on. Don't disregard that last like half comment, half sentence thing.
So you liked it?
I liked it.
Yeah, but you didn't like it as much as the first.
No, uh-uh. But it was a lot of fun still. Like I definitely. Like a B easily. I wouldn't give it an A yet, but there are very few movies that I do give it an A. Mm-hmm. So definitely a B, you know, in there for me. Yeah, I liked it a lot. So
cool. Laura?
Yeah, I liked it too. When I left the theater, Mikey shot me down really fast, but I told him that I was pretty astounded that I was astounded by the quality it was as a sequel, because generally when I go into a sequel, I don't expect it to be... I just expect... it to disappoint me to some degree.
Yeah,
if I like the first one. Oh my god, that was so terrible. Yes, this was not Spy Kids 2. And my first impression was that I thought it was really strong on its own, and I felt like it didn't rely on any of the... Like, I feel like in animated sequels, they often say, like, oh, everyone thought it was really funny when we made the character do this, so we're just going to make him do that over and over again in the sequel, because we know that works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like they weren't... The filmmaking felt like they weren't concerned with perpetuating what worked the first time. They were creating something new,
mm-hmm.
which I really appreciated. So I thought it was... thoughtful, well-crafted. It made me cry a couple of times. So, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like, Laura says I shot her down. I'm not exactly in what specific context, given I did not think it was...
Well, I said, I'm astounded that it doesn't feel inferior to the first. And you said, really?
I was like, really?
Really?
It was a little inferior.
You have to say it like Mr. Incredible. Really?
Really?
Really? Do you mean that?
I love The Incredibles. Okay.
There's another one coming out. Oh, my gosh.
Well, we hope it's coming out.
No, it's coming. If Pixar is as smart as we all know they are, it's coming.
Well, like I said, I really enjoyed the movie. And... You know, I laughed, I cried, But
what more do you want?
Well, that's the thing. I felt like
what do you want from me.
I felt like it was so much fun to watch. I thought that they really stepped their game up with the animation in this movie. Like it was just beautiful and breathtaking at times. It was so good that I actually was like, you know what? I might have wanted to see this in 3D.
Hmm.
Which, I mean, there's rarely a movie that I would really get a lot of, or I feel like I would get a lot out of 3D.
Yeah.
Especially at the cost of the extra 3D price. But I did have that thought. I think there were scenes in this movie that were funnier than anything in the first movie. There were scenes in this movie that were more sincere or serious than anything that we saw in the first movie. But I felt like that's all they were. They were just a collection of scenes that, to me, didn't flow together as a full story enough to be more powerful than the story that I saw in the first How to Train Your Dragon film. So from start to finish, the first How to Train Your Dragon film is one of my favorite animated movies. And I didn't, I mean, given I haven't waited this long to see it, but I didn't see it for probably 6 months. When it came out in theater, I was not interested. I was like, oh, DreamWorks is putting out another movie.
Plus, the title really just is dumb. I just hate the title.
Yeah. It's not great. And that's, if I had one qualm about like the whole series, it's just that they could do better with the title. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like most people who have only recently seen it, most of their qualms were like, it seems silly. I don't know what it's about. You know, things like that. And I completely understand it because that's what took me like 6 months to see it. But once I saw it, I was like, oh my goodness,
mm-hmm.
this is great. And so I was really excited for this one. And I think part of my slight disappointment in this film was the fact that my expectations were so unrealistically high that there was nothing this movie could do unless, like, Optimus Prime was riding Toothless, you know.
I would be happy about that. You're gonna see Optimus Prime? Really?
You'd see it and you'd be like, what are you doing?
You expected it to be the down under to the Rescuers.
Well,
and that's what you wanted, and it just couldn't live up to that.
Well, I wanted it to be Toy Story 2 to Toy Story.
Darn you, Griffin! I love that movie too.
I'm name dropping every great like animated movie.
I seriously had like Bernard and Bianca ornaments that I fought over with my brother. I loved that movie.
Yes.
You needed to prep me for this question. Clearly,
you did fine. No one here is begrudging your answer.
I'm going to start like bringing it. So she'll be like, that would have totally been in the top three.
Oh,
well,
gosh.
So as a whole movie, that's kind of where I feel it. And I do say let down. And I use that very lightly because, like I said, I really still enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, you were let down from a really high place.
You know, compared to the first movie and compared to my lofty, unattainable expectations, this movie did let me down. But outside of those two things, I still think it's a better animated movie than most of the animated movies that I've seen over the past couple years. Or at least on par with the best of those animated movies. So it's still a thumbs up. It's just not like thumbs way up.
Wow, you were being so critical.
When something's
this good, you kind of have to nitpick on the littlest things because it is that. I mean, it's like that high up there.
Well, it's like when you have to rate movies. Well, not that everyone has to rate movies, but typically I'm called to rate movies.
When you're forced to rate movies,
people would chain you to a desk and say, "Rate these movies." You know, like trying to find the difference between like, what you would consider like a 4-star movie or a 4.5-star movie or a 5-star movie, like those things, you know, when you start cramming more and more movies in there, you're like, ooh, so how much more do I like this movie than this other movie?
Yeah.
And you have to find small details.
Yeah, it's funny. I had this conversation with somebody a couple weeks ago about that. There's this app that me and a couple friends use called Untappd. It's for like beer drinking if you're a beer schnob. And
which probably lots of the children listening to this episode.
Yeah, all the kids are like, so like I'm a beer schnob. If you're like a Coca-Cola snob, so if you're drinking a Coca-Cola, but so like he, you know, one of my friends was like, yeah, this is one of my favorite beers, and I'm like, so I don't know, how does it get rated like a 3.5 or like a 4, and he on your like list, and he's like, I need to change that. And that's kind of where you... But for me, it's like, for whenever it comes to a movie, if I'm going to say something that's five stars or like an A-plus movie, it can do little to absolutely nothing wrong for me to say that about
yeah.
it. There are very few movies that I feel that way about. And that's part of that's just because I'm kind of like, I'm hypercritical.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been a movie that we've like reviewed that I've been like all in on, like top to bottom with you. So...
Yeah, well, and I don't think that I've seen lots of five-star movies in the past. Well, in the past year that we've been doing this podcast, I think there were two movies last year that I would have rated five stars, and neither of those movies did I do on the podcast. So
give it to me.
You don't know what those movies are?
I'm gonna guess one of them in my head, but I'm gonna let you tell me.
So it was. Oh my gosh!
You can't even name it now.
I'm like picturing Chiwetel Ejiofor running.
Oh, 12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave.
Okay.
And Short Term 12. If it had the number 12 in it, it got 5 stars for me last year.
That's all it takes.
Short Term 12 Years a Slave.
Short Term 12 Years a Slave. All right.
So it's like it's a Wheel of Fortune before and after. Short Term 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
So both those movies I thought were perfect. Didn't do either of them on the podcast for various reasons.
Yeah.
So, but... People who are going to come to the real world events in person, which by the time you're listening to this, you know, it might be a year later, so it won't be relevant, but we are going to do Short Term 12, so that's going to be great.
So excited.
I'm so excited to talk about
people. Let's talk about why this movie was not five stars.
Let's talk,
or why it should be five stars.
Well, what were some of your favorite, what were some of the things that made you really like it, Laura?
Okay, well... I immediately went to my favorite moment in my mind, but I can't say that yet.
You can.
I'll just say one of the things I really liked was I thought this was a great film for kids who are coming of age and trying to figure out who they are and what they want to do in the world. I thought that just the way that it showed Hiccup processing that transition into the adult life was just really I can't even think of the word I want to use. It was
authentic.
It was authentic, and I think that it's very rarely shown that way. Like, I feel like normally it's one of two things. It's a kid having to be completely independent and stupid and make dumb choices and figure it out on their own, or they have to completely follow what their parents do. And I feel like it's easy to fall into one of those categories as, like, a real human being, not an animated human being.
God, I'd love to be animated.
But I felt like Hiccup was taking things that he valued about his father and taking things he valued about his mother and was evaluating if that was him, and he was, like, trying to follow his instincts, but also doing it in a way that showed that he had some wisdom and some reason and some discernment. And I appreciated that because I think I kind of expected them to show the teenage character or the young adult character as being kind of dumb and not being able to think through a situation or whatever. But he was just a really strong character.
But they show that he had the heart of a chief and the soul of a dragon.
I don't know if I love that line.
Yeah.
But I just liked the way that he was a strong character, and he was kind of feeling out his way in the world without having to be a complete and total idiot while still learning things. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he wasn't incompetent.
Yeah.
But
I like that.
I feel like in a lot of animated movies, we see our hero or, you know, whatever, our main protagonist tends to always either be, like, they're completely right the whole time and the world's just trying to catch up,
mm-hmm.
or the world's right the whole time and they're just trying to go on a journey to realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like Hiccup in this movie was in between those two worlds. Like, he was right and he was wrong.
Right.
You know, he had a little bit of, like, his hopeful optimism and desire to make peace was admirable. And in the first movie, it brought a village, you know, it brought the dragons and the village of Berk together. And it was this great community building thing. But that same optimism doesn't necessarily work in every situation.
Exactly.
And I think it's hard to, I don't think a lot of movies do that.
Yeah.
I think they would have gone with that and be like, he's still right. He's still a hero.
Yeah. Because, yeah, because I think there's a push that, like, you have to be right all the time, or else, you know, like, being wrong is dangerous, or, like, being wrong about something you believe, changing a belief is weak or something like that. But I think you're right. I think authentic is the word I'm looking for, because I feel like it was true to the real world in that way. That, let's see, I put down in my notes that there aren't any easy answers. There's no always right and there's no always wrong. Everyone is just doing what they feel is best. They're just trying to make wise decisions. They're trying to follow their gut. But not everyone is always right. And I think the film inadvertently explored trying to find a balance between, you know, different sides of an issue. And I like that.
Griffin.
What I liked about the movie?
No, just
I mean,
Griffin.
Well,
Griffin, what do you have to say, Griffin?
Just tell me, Griffin. No, so in this movie, the thing that gets us going in the start of the story, it's I guess it's what is resolved at the end of the story, even though there's lots of other things that go
you're
on.
You're talking about the match, the game, right? That starts, gets us going, it ends.
Oh, well.
I did love the sport. I thought it was hilarious. Every time the sheep came, I thought that was like, the sheep were like huddling around and they were like trying to not get taken. That was the funniest thing to me. And I loved it. I loved the sport. But yeah, I think I like that it starts the movie off where Hiccup is really trying to carve his own path in the world. He's like trying to discover new lands. He's trying to do something that no one else in the tribe is doing, even though they all have the means to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like how she somehow caught up to him. Like, he was off discovering new land, and she somehow knew exactly where he was.
Yeah.
Did you get mm-hmm. that? I couldn't figure that out. And that's
well,
more of a,
there's a whole other problem with Astrid.
She being Astrid.
Yeah. There's a whole other problem with Astrid, his, like, girlfriend that I have in this movie. Because it's weird, because they're saying that Hiccup's, like, 20 years old now.
And they're going to get married.
Yeah, I guess.
No, he called him his future daughter. Yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean.
I mean, that's like an old man.
That's
doing.
Like a proud parent being like, you know, she's going to be my future daughter-in-law or whatever. Just because he's the chief and he assumes that everything is going to be exactly like. Whether they actually feel. I didn't take it as like they're already betrothed. Because they really have the most awkward relationship I think I've ever seen.
But here's the thing. It's actually going to be kind of one of. It's probably going to be my favorite part of the movie. Was like the relational aspects of it. Of the movie was like, so he meets his mom, who's like the mysterious dragon lady.
Spoiler alert! Trailer.
So he meets his mom, and it's very much like this, he doesn't really trust her, like, understandably so, mm-hmm. and he's never really, his dad just gets kaput, spoiler alert, gets kablamoed, murdered in the face, and he doesn't like run to his mom and have her cuddle him. Like he's angry himself. He isn't really like fully against his dad, like you kind of expect a character like in that position would be in a normal animated film, where they're just like, I'm never gonna do what my father asked me to do. He's not completely against him. And he's not like head over heels like acting in love with this girl who not too long ago, last movie, was like wanted to have nothing to do with him. Like acting all standoffish to him. He's a very level-headed character, which is not typical of animated film characters. It's just not. And so I love that aspect of the film, and I think that that's where, for me, like I didn't mind the awkwardness of their relationship because I felt like it was authentic. And so, but well, I think where what my problem with it, and I think this goes to kind of more what your storytelling idea is there were too many things that just happened. Like, I couldn't suspend my belief story-wise that it would just work out this way in these specific... Because it's like them... You know, her first off, her coming and somehow meeting him whenever he's out on, like, the edge of what they know.
Yeah.
Maybe he told her, like, I'm going to fly over here in this direction at 800...
Babe.
I'm gonna fly 80 knots in this direction and you're going to find me there. You know, it wasn't like that. And it also... And then they, like... You don't see the ice... thing, but then he's like, let's go over here, and then they find the ice thing, and that I can kind of get with, but then like them flying back only to fly back. there was a lot of moving parts that I felt like it was almost impossible. Like, it would have been a huge task for the filmmakers to say, like,
let's make all this perfectly work in continuity and make it accessible. And I get why it was necessary, but like, I think for me, like continuity wise, it just, some of the things felt a little bit like, a little bit forced. So that's why, you know, that's where I land whenever I'm saying like, I'm not going to give it 5 stars or even really 4.5. I mean, maybe 4.5, maybe 4.5.
Well, like I said, I felt like they were, I didn't begrudge any of the character journeys that we took. I was fine with basically all of those.
Oh God, I love the two guys like totally dissing the girl at the end. That's like
my that great.
He has some issues.
I don't want to
about women. Come on.
I don't want to totally get into that because that's another thing for later in the show.
I'll say that's more of a counseling moment than a like movie.
But like I said, I love the journeys each character went on. Yeah. Like I love the journey Hiccup went on. Mm-hmm. Well, Astrid, I felt was one of the most
She was static.
She was static. She like, didn't of change. All the characters, like you know, Hiccup's mom, who I wrote down her name, Val something.
But you have like
Valka.
You have like Eret, and he goes from being like this bad guy to being like this good guy.
Yeah.
You have like the other girl, whatever her name is, like going from being like super in love with like, or not wanting to do with anybody. Then she like loves Eret. Then she's like, I like you both. And they both are like, kiss off now. And
Rough Nut. That was her
Rough
name.
Rough Nut. Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like those things could be expressed. Those were kind of like tropes, I guess, of storytelling that are not difficult to show. Like those are changes that weren't terribly nuanced.
No, uh-uh.
And so I felt like, I mean, in a movie watching season where I felt like we've watched a bunch of movies that tried to do too much, and we've had these conversations before, I appreciated the fact that it kind of felt to me like they're either not going to go really in-depth about Astrid and Hiccup's relationship, or it's going to be, like, a big thing.
The movie.
And if they had tried to make that a big thing, I think it would have just added, it would have been too much. It would have taken away from the story they were trying to tell. And so I appreciated the fact that they made wise storytelling decisions for the strength of the overall story.
Yeah, their story, I think their point in the entire movie was to get to the heart of his relationship with his parents, their relationship to each other.
And him becoming chief.
Him kind of growing into, like, going from being, like, this little boy who couldn't do anything right in the first movie to now being the man who stands alone while his father's dead. He's not like running to Astrid or to his mother for that. They're both running to him, asking him for condolences. Like they're both asking him for solace when he's the one like, I'm angry and I'm going to kill this mother.
So since we know we're going to get a How to Train Your Dragon 3.
Yeah.
Do we see like a progression of kind of like you're saying, Griffin, in the first movie, we get Hiccup embracing who he is. In the second one, we get him taking who he is and understanding where his place, like he has to understand himself, so there's one person.
Yeah.
He has to understand who he is to his society. And then in the third one, we'll get who, how he'll use that power and position to affect his legacy.
Yeah.
Because I imagine in the third one, we got to know him and basically know him and Astrid, but the next movie will be, I'm 23 or 5 now, and I'm engaged to Astrid, and she's becoming my best friend, Toothless.
And there'll be...
The Toothless goes off, and is like, oh, I don't want you. You know, he doesn't want me anymore. And he's like, I just can't ride you all the time, Toothless, because I'm in love with Astrid, and we're going to have babies.
I go ahead?
You have some very specific things this film has to do.
Can I spoil How to Train Your Dragon 3 for us? End of the movie. Toothless will have found a mate.
Yeah, he'll find
a mate. There will be baby dragons and baby Astrid and Hiccups, and they will be riding the baby dragons. That's going to be the final scene. And I will put money on it today. That's going to be the way that movie ends. Because, you know, that is a trope. That is very much
How many times in this movie did they say, oh, I'm pretty sure he is the last one. Don't think I ever see any more Nightwings anymore. I'm like, why do you have to keep saying this?
We all get that eventually you're going to find one more. They're going to fall in love.
It's just going to happen to be a woman.
No, but to start with, they're not going to be in love. She's going to be standoffish. Toothless is going to like her. Or it's going to be vice versa. By the end of the movie, they're in love, having babies, other babies. Bam. We got us a movie.
Well,
we can make movies.
It would be unusual because that's how they did this. I mean, that's what they've done with Toothless and Hiccup. They've, like, grown up together. Like, Hiccup in this movie is trying to find out who he is, and Valka shows us, you know, shows Toothless how to, like, raise these spines on his back, which he didn't know about. And,
yeah.
Like, you know, he's growing, too. And so, and then at the end, he becomes chief of the dragons, and Hiccup becomes chief of them.
Yeah, they both are kind of almost, because they're both
they're the
leaders,
mm-hmm.
they're separating in some ways. I mean, they're kind of, that's like the point where they almost begin growing apart, is at the end, they're both alpha.
Which movie are we talking about here?
No, I think
well, it's going to.
It's got to, because I think...
Whoa, what is this? There. I mean, not that this is original and all, and I know it's probably been done in more than one movie.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like two friends who grew up, and then they're both in charge of different things, so they go separate ways.
Yeah. And I realize that the end of the movie isn't that. I realize that the last scene isn't them going to separate ways.
But the opening montage of the third one will be.
Yeah, but now it will be. Yeah, it's a matter of they're both all powerful, because in the last movie you have Hiccup making Toothless incapable of being alone and mm-hmm. working in and of himself. You have Hiccup being his provider, teaching him how to fly again, teaching him how to training him again.
Both bled together.
Yeah.
They obviously didn't bleed because it's an animated movie.
They both lost.
But
limbs, quote unquote.
Yeah. And so then, but then you have this, but now, you know, they both needed each other in the last movie. Now neither one of them really need each other, because Toothless just proved he can take on anything, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hiccup just proved that he can also stand, you know, alone and handle things. It's very interesting.
Well, no, and I think the whole reason that we're talking about this is because in this movie, I think one of the best things that it does is more so than I saw any two... Well, there were some really great scenes between Stoic and Valka,
mm-hmm.
That I think speak a lot about family and love and what that means. And we can get to that in a minute. But as far as friends go, people who were in like bonded relationship, the fact that it wasn't like Hiccup and Astrid or Hiccup and another Viking, it was Hiccup and this dragon. They find that, like, the facial expressions, the human characteristics that they give to Toothless and really bring him to life, like, we never doubt their friendship. And we're let in to see these little intimate moments of their friendship. Honestly, it's kind of sad that I don't really see movies that have two dudes doing that often, because I feel like if you made a movie today where two dudes...
I love you, man.
I know. Well,
that's why it's like my favorite
American well, I comedy. Love you, man is an exception.
Yeah.
But see, it's still a comedy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like you see and there is like an exception rarely, but most of the time you make that, the first thing the audience is going to assume is that two dudes can't be that close.
Yeah.
Without being like sexually intimate. They can't be gay. And I think that's sad, because I think there's lots of females that can be friends without being that way. There's lots of dudes that can be friends without being that way. I mean, it's not a lie that lots of times when you start to get that close to someone, even if they are the same sex, that the feelings can go in that direction. And I'm not really talking about the rightness or wrongness of that. I'm really talking about like the fact that when you see people get that close, you assume that it has to progress to that next level. It can't.
You're just feeling that. Misrepresented, but not often represented at all.
Yeah, so it's so hard to tell a story where you have that kind of bond, and it is truly just, you know, like the David-Jonathan relationship that we see in the Bible that we hardly ever see anywhere else, that all guys say they want, but most guys are too afraid to step into. And how much easier it is to show it, because it's Hiccup and a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not Hiccup and his best bud.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it's why I love to see it, but I wish I could see it in more movies in general with just two guys. Because, I mean, those are the kind of relationships I want. I want a dude that I trust and I know that will be there for me all the time, just like Toothless is there for Hiccup and Hiccup's there for Toothless. They trust one another. They got each other's backs. They're both like encouraging and pushing the other one to be better. And I just, like I said, I just don't think we get that. I think the closest we get lots of times are war movies, like buddy war or, you know, like camaraderie movies, where it's like, we don't say that we love each other, but I got your back, man. Or, you know, buddy cop movies, which really aren't, I think that's unfortunate that that's the closest we typically get.
Well, I think that this kind of goes into like more the marriage side of things, which I think it sets up for a third movie really well, is that you have Hiccup in the first movie, like we said, being confident and knowing who he is. In the second movie, being confident and knowing who he is supposed to be around another male, and like confident in that, and having somebody who he can in some ways talk to and share life with, and it not, and him being confident in that without having to also be like pushing that person away for the sake of a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, hopefully, I hope in the third movie that they develop that character, Astrid, and work that out, that they would be together. Because it is, like, it's a perfect trope that she's, like, the prettiest girl in the neighborhood, or in the
Burke.
In the Burke. And he's, you know, he's the son of the great, great Stoic. And so, I think that that's something that's really, I think, often missed, especially in... I think especially in our society, and I would honestly even say especially in church society, is that we encourage people so quickly to rush into this thing of marriage and doing this, that we often neglect their really deep need for like relationship in general.
Mm-hmm.
We tell ourselves and others around us, like, this is something you have to get into immediately after a certain like life stage,
or you failed,
or you've messed up, or what have you done wrong?
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, what's wrong with you that you don't have anybody at 30? You know, it's very much a thing where I think that we encourage that so much that we miss their really deeper need for understanding relationship and relationship with someone who isn't expecting love in the sexual sense out of them. And I think that really gets to the heart of like what our relationship with Christ is supposed to look like, is that we, you know, we that's, I think that's why we so misunderstand that relationship, and it's so hard for us so often. Part of it is, a big part of it is because he's just not physically here, but also it's because we can't understand that a person wants to know us that intimately but not want us sexually. We can't comprehend that because we didn't have that, and then we got married. We've never had that, and then we get married. And I think part of this conversation is me projecting where I'm at, mm-hmm. you know, in life, is that I'm 23 and I'm like, I'm not getting married for quite a while, and that's going to upset my family. Like my right now, I know that my family don't like that idea, that I'm like, it'll be probably like 28, 30, 40. And I don't really know, mom and dad. Like, I don't know when you're going to get a grandkid out of me, because for me, I'm like, I'm having a hard enough time figuring out my non-intimate, non-sexual relationship with Christ, that I don't really want to bring that into like this other relationship that's supposed to look that way.
Well, and I did like the fact, even though I think it might have gone too far, that Hiccup is mainly concerned about finding his place, and he's not really dragging Astrid into it.
Exactly.
And I like the fact that they actually can have... Because one of my biggest like TV tropes that annoys me is the only way that we know these people are in love is because they just had sex.
Exactly.
And that's one of my biggest pet peeves.
Or they just kissed, or they just, you know...
Yeah. And so I like the fact that we have an understanding that Astrid and Hiccup are in some way dedicated to one another without having to have them all over each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of that coin is, in this particular case, they so were not, I guess, I felt like there was not enough chemistry there. So when they actually did have a moment where they kissed, I was like, this is awkward. Did no one else feel like it was awkward
Not really.
I didn't, and part of that is because, like, so my thing about the movie with that was that he, you know, you have him wanting to find Toothless. You have him be like, I need to go get Toothless. I need to find him first. I need to get that right first. And then he finds Toothless and he's like, now we need to get Astrid and the others. And Astrid to him is the most important one of that group, and he makes that clear, but it's also and the others. I think that this is like, to me they get it almost too real for someone for that relationship. Is like, it's almost too realistic of what like a good, like, I'm not like changing my whole world for you relationship would look like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making decisions based on what you want, because she's like, Your dad said you could be the chief. What are we doing? Why don't we go back to the, you know, burr and, like, handle our business and be a chief? Like, become chief today. Like, right now, what are we waiting for? Yeah. And he's like, no, like, you want that, and that's great, honey. I love you, but but I want something else, or I need to figure out that that's the right thing for me. And, like, yeah. Well,
and when you talk about relationships, I think that's one of the most important things. I think lots of people go into relationships before they're comfortable with themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for their significant other, where it ends up being a girlfriend or boyfriend or an eventual spouse, to fill whatever void it is that they're looking for and that comfort level that they have of themselves. And so I like that Hiccup, hypothetically, I mean, I know, I feel like we're, you know, reading maybe slightly too much into it, but he's not trying to get Astrid to fill that void.
I just don't think they were ready to tell that story yet.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about it, was that they wanted to give that story the time that it deserved, and this movie was not about that. And so, I actually liked the fact that their relationship is completely juxtaposed to what's going on with, what's her name, Roughnut.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I liked that comparison that, you know, you have people that are crazy, two guys that are crazy about this girl. And so you've got, like, this kind of representation of young love where it's all about that, like, tunnel vision. And there's a lot of drama, and it's messing up friendships. And also, you know, Roughnut falls in love with this guy for no reason except for his amazing muscles, you know.
Well,
Kit Harington, who I can't remember his name in the movie.
Son of Eret.
Well, I figured you would be sympathetic to that character because you would understand what it is like to fall for a guy just because of his rippling muscles.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I was right there. And that was, you know, that was really comical, and I enjoyed all that. And then, you know, I just felt like it was a great comparison to a different kind of love, like a different kind of...
Well, lots of different kinds of love. We saw so many.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically about Astrid. I'm thinking specifically about teenage love and how teenagers come to terms with attraction or love or whatever.
Yeah, let's not get to my come on moment yet.
No, yeah,
I don't want to get there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Or my favorite moment.
Yeah.
So I liked that comparison that there was, and in general, I think one of the things I liked about this movie was its representation of youth and about giving youth a voice and about not discounting it and not discounting its wisdom. I really was reminded, I wrote this verse down, I was reminded of 1 Timothy 4:12. Don't let anyone think less of you because you're young. Be an example to all believers in what you say and the way you live, in your love, your faith, and your purity. And I felt like there was a great representation of that, that there were some cases where the teenagers or young adults needed adult guidance, and then there were times when the adults were being taught by the teenagers. So, I can't even remember where I jumped from Astrid and Hiccup to that. But I think in general, there was some great representation of, like, giving teenagers the benefit of the doubt when we usually say they're reckless, they're selfish, they're, you know...
Irresponsible.
They're irresponsible, and Hiccup definitely wasn't like that. And so I guess I didn't expect for his love with Astrid to have any kind of drama or overblown anything.
Man, women make people crazy. Women make people crazy.
I think you both have baggage.
Okay, so, like I said, we spent a lot of time on a topic that we might have been reading a lot into.
You might have been reading a lot.
Well, I think Griffin was equally reading a lot into it.
Well, I wasn't, for the record.
We were on the reading a lot into it train, but something that I do not believe was supposed to be subtle is this concept of, like, man versus nature and which one is right. But I think they take it a step further because... I think what they did, whether they meant to or not, is they showed that there is a power in man to corrupt nature, but they also showed that if that power is used, I guess, for good, for lack of a better way to put it, it also has the ability to exceed nature. Because we get this really awful, awful line that I can't remember exactly, but something about, you know,
even a good dragon in the hands of an evil man is can do bad or something.
Yeah, something
very, very obvious.
Yeah, something very, very Let me spell it out in case you didn't understand why.
Yeah, very obtuse.
Yeah, where, why Toothless just flew off.
With although the other... we literally just saw this happen visually.
Yeah.
So
let me say it.
So we get that line, and it's kind of talking about how, you know, the dragons are just dragons. They're there to eat, to fly around, to be cool, and they're generally nice. And man comes in and jacks that all up. They use it, you know, it's Drago or Drago who's corrupting these dragons and forcing them to be evil. But at the same time, in the climax of the movie, we also see that that influence and that power that a man has, except this man is Hiccup this time, he can overcome like the natural order. And I thought that was pretty astounding. Like this concept that man has inside him ability to love, and that love is greater than the way things naturally are. Because if things were only the way things naturally are, the alpha would always win. Mm-hmm. But there's something greater than the natural world. Mind blown. How to Train Your Dragon 2. See ya.
I don't know if I think of it as being greater than the natural world, but maybe that when man is fulfilling his part of nature in the way that he is meant to, that there can be a wholeness, that there's like a break in that chain that, I mean, things are not the way they're supposed to be. So I didn't necessarily think of it as like, oh, when man is dominating nature, but he's doing it in a good way versus man dominating nature in a bad way. I felt like it was more, it seemed to clearly show the picture of not like nature subjected, not subjected, what's the word I'm looking
submissive?
For?
Submissive?
Subdued? Subdued by man, yes. But that...
It's my favorite game.
You know I'm just picking the best one you threw out there, right? It's not just the one I wanted, but... I felt like it was them working together, almost on an equal plane.
Well, so he's bringing balance to the nature force.
Well, I think you have this world where, so you have the world of like the first, the original, the actual alpha, and he's like in the ice cave, and there are all the dragons flying around, and he's
like the Dragon Eden.
Yeah, he's got like all the power, and they all like follow his, like he could tell them what to do, and they would all follow his rule. Then you have the middle ground of like Hiccup, and they have saddles on their dragons, and they kind of control, but they also love, and they like let them do their thing. And then you have this like ultimate spectrum side of things where it's like complete control, complete subjective
chain.
And so, but whenever it comes to it, like this place where like the Eden dragon gets beaten like 5 seconds, like he's done because he didn't utilize. Like, he didn't know how to control. He had no control because it was just like free reign. Everybody do what they want. And so we're going to get our butts kicked and then we go out there. And he had this. He had more power because he had all these dragons behind him than the other guy did.
He just didn't utilize
it. He didn't utilize it. And so then you have this moment where the other dragon's like, well, I'm going to utilize it to the max, to the like the fullest extent. And then you obviously have the middle ground of Hiccup where he's like not he's like controlling but also loving and like, being in control but not like letting it, you know, take over. I mean, that's a very easy trope to point out of like there's the middle ground and that's where we all want to be, is right there in the middle because that's the best place to be, you know.
Well, I think for all the kids drinking Coca-Cola during this, the word trope will now be the
we've used that word a lot
so many times.
Well, animated movies are they do it.
Yeah.
I mean it's
well, it's recognizable.
It's a trope because we were taught it as kids.
There you go again.
Yeah. it's a trope because we were taught it as kids. You know, we've known it in every TV show from Boy Meets World to, like, you know, what's going on today. You know, everything tends to, like, keep following these same rules, so we know, oh, that's the way things work in movies. Whenever you don't do that, it feels kind of weird, or it's just not, you do it badly and it's terrible.
Well, it's good if it uses a building block, like it's the base to build something else on. I like that. I'm glad you pointed that out about the three different ways, because I didn't see it that way. That's, anyway, that's a very clear way to look at it. Like, but I was thinking that Valka and the, like, Dragon Utopia, I think pretty, it seemed pretty clearly like it was painted like, this is the way things are supposed to be, and we shouldn't interfere, and it's perfect the way that it is, and everybody's, like, getting along, and it's beautiful, and, like, the Alpha is, like, a great father that is caring for all these other dragons, and, I think it's easy to look at it that way. Like, we just need to leave it alone and have nothing to do with it. Like, we are the ones who are messing everything up. You know, humans are messing everything up. But at the same time, like, at some point in this movie, I was thinking, like, you know, we're really sympathetic with the dragons now. We're, like, really on board with, like, we need to be pro-dragon. But what about the sheep? Like, you know, like, I think you could just keep following that. Like, the dragons are clearly not vegetarian. You know, they're eating fish. Do we care about the fish? Like, they're animals too, you know? Like, at what level do we say that? I don't know. I just think that it's easy to see that scene as painting nature as being, like, the ultimate, that we should just hands off. But, I don't know. I think the middle way maybe is a little bit more powerful, that we're helping each other to be the best that we can, humans and dragons, instead of one world being better than the other.
Hmm. Well, with Perfect World, we will use that to transition to kind of start winding it down.
Already?
I mean, we've already talked for like over an hour.
Gosh, Griffin, it's all your fault.
So, we'll do what we do every time, which is start with our come on moments, because it wasn't a perfect movie, so we're going to be nitpicky. So, Griffin, your come on moment.
My first, I'm going to have...
That's fine.
I'm going to have two, and it's probably going to be somebody... one of my come ons is probably going to be somebody else's favorite. One of my come ons is the scar on the chin. That probably wasn't there in the first movie. That was like that was one of those things for me that was like too. It's like I wanted to go back and watch it. I'm sure they wouldn't do a close up enough that you would mm-hmm, see it.
Yeah.
But still, like, I was just like, that's too easy. Like, that was just like, I was like, oh, that's kind of dumb. But my other come on moment was just that, like, okay, Stoic walks in. He hasn't seen this woman in forever. She's alive. She could have easily flown back to him and, like, had a conversation with him, talked to him like adults. And he's just like, girl, I love you. And I'm like, really? Just like that? Like, I understand, like, being forgiving.
No, you don't understand, Griffin.
And grace.
No. Nope.
I get that, like, these grace is important. I just don't know that it's, like, let's just get back on this wagon and let me just start singing songs to you. And I like that Valka is, she's a little bit more level-headed about it, about love. Like, she clearly still loves him, but she also is like, you are still the same guy who straight up was like wanting to kill dragons, these things that I had a passion for and a love for. And I think in this way, he was like more like the head over heels, like really casting all wisdom to the wind, where she was saying like, you're still that same guy that I left and stayed away from. So I'm going to like slowly edge my way back into this, and slow for like an hour and a half movie. It's not like slow in general life. But yeah, so that's my come on moment, is that I just felt like that was like really kind of, yeah, I just, not realistic. But that's also, I'm not married, and my wife's never left me with a child to raise on my own for 20 years, and only to discover she's been alive this whole time and been training with dragons.
Well, you're just like the older brother in the parable of the prodigal wife. Stoic was like,
she didn't come back to him. You make it sound, she did not come back to him.
But that's not, you're missing the point. It's not
who, I'm not missing the point.
It's not who comes back to who, because Stoic is like, for this is my wife who was dead and is alive again. She was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate.
You just looked that up, didn't you?
I did look that up.
I mean, you quoted that from memory because of your
of the Bible.
Scripture mind.
I'm just saying,
because, like, he's a Christian. Better than you, by the way.
Like, wink! I'm just saying, if I thought that I... We'll get to this later.
Yes.
Come on moments. Laura.
Right? Okay. Well, I had like a couple of different parts that I rolled my eyes at, but they all fell under the same thing, which was that they were speeches that people gave or lines people said that were totally unnecessary because it had just been visually, stunningly visually accomplished, and then they felt like, well, we have to say it. And I guess, you know, maybe they had to do that because it's a kids' movie and they were afraid that kids weren't going to get it. But I feel like kids are way more perceptive than adults. And if they see, like, Toothless, this dragon we all love, suddenly hypnotize and kill somebody, we know that that's not his fault. Like, you don't need Valka to say, like, well, he's a good dragon in the hands of an evil man, you know? So that line really bothered me. And then there was another one that I think I leaned over and said something to you about, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, when you leaned over and said something, you said, there's another Ravenclaw or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to, if you listen to the Maleficent episode, we like to call those lines the Raven Duval lines.
Raven Duval lines.
Like from Maleficent. No true love.
Just in case you weren't listening, just in case you went to go get popcorn, this is what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was your biggest...
Yeah, those are the things I have problems with.
Well, besides, I'd say I have a trifecta. One is, what the heck, trailer making people? You know how much...
I'm so sick of this.
You know, I mean, we talked about this last episode.
I feel like we're going to talk about this for the rest of our lives.
It certainly seems like this is something that's not going to go away. But there are things, like the entire reveal of it being Hiccup's mom... would have been so much more powerful if we would have not known that going into the movie.
Yeah, because she's wearing all that crazy get-up. Wearing... You didn't know who she was.
I totally thought she was Drago. I was like, oh, she's going to kill him. Or that thing's going to kill him.
But that's what I would have thought if I didn't watch the trailer.
That's right.
But, so there's that. There's a movie that visually... I mean, if the movie wouldn't have been so visually stunning, this probably wouldn't have bothered me so much. But kind of like Laura pointed out, the visuals and the visual storytelling was so good at times for some of these scenes. I don't know why they had to have a character like pop in the side of the screen and be like, hi, hey guys, that was crazy, right? When that thing happened? And everybody's like, yeah, we just saw it happen. Why are we talking about it like this? So that was really annoying. But I think the thing that was woven throughout, if I had to pick one that was the worst to me, is that I basically, I'm trying to think if there's ever a time, maybe the very last scene that Griffin had mentioned earlier in regards to this, but the rough nut love triangle with Snot Lout and Fish Legs didn't do a thing for me. Every time it was on the screen, I was like, dumb. I just thought it was not done very well. It wasn't developed enough for me to like be invested in it in any way. And it didn't really pay off like it could have, except for the fact at the end, well, like I said, when Griffin had mentioned earlier that they both, both the guys ran to their dragons instead of to her. I think I was supposed to be like, ha 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 ha, love triangle.
Demolished.
But, yeah. But instead I was like, oh, it's over. I don't have to sit, you know, like. You know, I was just glad it was done. I just, of all the ways that they portrayed relationships, either broken or reuniting or fully functional, this was the only one that I just didn't get. I felt like I said, I just didn't think it was done very well. So personally, didn't do it for me. But now that we're at our hopeless moment, we're at the dark night of the soul of the show, our come on moments, we will turn and face our favorite moments as we rise ourselves up from the pit. So
I think for me it definitely was the relationship that develops between Hiccup and his mother and how that progresses in the almost an exact opposite way of the way that his father interacts with his mother. Sorry. Keep banging on the like that.
Oh wow!
I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. I'm not gonna do it again. I'm a jerk. I just kept banging on the table. But no. But like the way that he doesn't trust her immediately. Mm-hmm. He's like, you were dead. You're gone. And now you're alive. And you knew I was alive the whole time. And you knew I was alive so much that you like saw the birth scar and or the mark. And you were like, oh, that's what that. And I like that he's, like, not sure of her.
And that feels very real to me in a way that so many of the other relationships in the movie feel very, like, very typical and very, like, normal whenever it comes to, like, especially, like, what we're talking about, like, with the love nut. What is her name? Rough Nut?
Rough Nut.
That's a terrible name. And that's, the names in this movie are garbage.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. about obvious. Yeah. Stoic and...
Yeah, yeah, stoic and hiccup, and he's like, oh, he makes mistakes, because, oh, but I get it was a nickname. That's why it was a nickname in the first... No, but yeah, like, I think that the way that he's, like, not sure of her, and I think that that's just so well developed for me, and I love character in stories and the way that they, different storytellers handle it. And I felt like they handled that better than I would have. And that is impressive to me that they were better than I am at filmmaking. Sarcasm, by the way, guys. Sarcasm. It's a joke.
All right. So I cried in both of these moments, although I also did a lot of crying when Hiccup and Toothless are just flying. Every time they're like flying and just free together, for some reason that just gets me.
Do you feel like a caged bird?
Maybe I do. But anyway.
I know why the caged bird sings.
So, one of my favorite moments was the reunion between Stoic and Valka, and it was because the first thing in my mind was, like, we love him because he first loved us. I mean, she really did nothing that would warrant him to be completely and totally forgiving and loving. And her instinct was to be really defensive, to, like, protect herself. She was backing away.
She was, like, afraid he was going to hurt her.
Right. And he just, he did not allow himself to go to this place that he had every right to go to.
Yeah.
I mean, he just completely loved her. It was beautiful to see, because if he had defended himself, if he had said, you left me alone, you know, like, where have you been? Ask questions that he probably will ask at some point. They'll talk about it. Because she already was defensive, because there was that going on, he really had the control there, because he could have poisoned that relationship immediately. I mean, it could have gotten off at a really bad start.
Yeah.
But instead, because he was willing to do what forgiveness does, and he was willing to take the pain on himself, their relationship was able to, like, start again on a good footing.
Okay, I back off my come on. Okay, I'm sorry, Laura. I'm very sorry. I was wrong. I've been wrong once in my life.
Tonight. So, but the other one was when they're dancing, and honestly, it was watching Hiccup's face while they were dancing that really got to me. And I think it was because it showed that by loving, by watching other people love each other, that edifies us too. Like, that teaches us how to love. And for Hiccup, this is his origin. This is where he came from, and he's never seen this before.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just, like, watching him watch his parents, and just that, like, his eyes lighting up, like he was seeing, I don't know. He was seeing where he came from. And that was really powerful.
It's so cool, because he hears, like, the whole time it's really happening, he hears the other guy, like, his dad's best friend, like, talking about it. And, like, talking about songs and, like, these things that are, like, historically true about his parents. And, like, it's such a cool moment, because it is. It's like for a moment, they're, like, kids again, because they just start, like, humming the song. Mm-hmm. They don't need music. And they're all enjoying it. And Hiccup is just, like, in awe of what's happened. Of this moment where, like, he's seeing, like, this is what my life would have looked like had she not been gone. Like, this is what I would have experienced. Like, it was them loving each other in this way, maybe.
It's like when Marty McFly goes back in the past and sees his parents at the Under the Sea dance, or Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
Yes.
It reminded me, too, of this book everyone used to talk about, The Shack. where, you know, there's, if you've ever read The Shack, there's a scene where the Father, the Son, and the Spirit are just like an unending dance, unbroken dance of love with each other. And I just felt like, I don't know, it was just a representation of, like, a beautiful moment where, like, love is just being exchanged. And, like, that's what we came out of, you know? That's where Hiccup came, and that's what he came out of, and that's what we came out of. We came out of love. So, anyway, both of those really meant a lot to me. I thought they were done really well.
Well, I would say my favorite scene was A scene in which I didn't feel like it should be my favorite scene if this movie was as good as it could have been.
Dessert.
Which is the scene where Stoic first sees Valka. Because I don't think that should have been the emotional climax of the movie. I feel like there should have been scenes that could have topped that towards the end of the movie. If the movie as a whole could hold up and wasn't just a whole bunch of really good scenes. And the reason I liked it so much is because, to me, this probably paints one of the best pictures of real and dedicated love that could compare to like the first 15 minutes of Up. Because I think the first 15 minutes of Up is some of the sweetest storytelling and a visual picture of what people would like their relationship to look like. But not everyone really feels that way. So lots of the feelings that people get with Up is like, I wish my relationship looked like this. This scene in How to Train Your Dragon 2 is when you absolutely love someone that much, and I think you're doing marriage right, that is how the reaction should look.
Like, that's the way you can get the picturesque love.
That is what I don't think there's nothing they could have said in any other way that I think would have really captured what it is like to love someone that honestly. And I think that's rare to capture on film, because the problem, I was weeping as well, because heck, if Laura and I have a disagreement or whatever, and like we like fight or whatever in the morning, and I don't get to see her all day, like by the time I come home, even if we haven't had a chance to resolve what that is, I'm so happy to see her. I don't care what the hurt was. I don't care, you know, what the grievance is at that point. I'm just so happy that relationship can continue. Not that we're ever like fighting and close to like divorce or anything, you know, but just that little microcosm. So I can only imagine, you know, if he loves her, Laura's talking about the dance scene and the singing and stuff like that, that we go on to see, like, that's what I would expect that to be like.
And I think at the same time, I feel like, when we talk about character building, they could have done a lot more to make you believe that he really loved her like that prior to him seeing her. And that's like, they never talked about her. They like until she shows up, they never talk about. And that was such an interesting thing to me that they just I still thought like she was dead. I hadn't seen the previews, so that was also I was kind of in for a good place because I hadn't seen the previews.
Mm-hmm.
I still thought she was dead. I didn't have a problem with them bringing her in, but I also didn't. I didn't feel like. I was just like, oh, she's alive, cool.
Yeah.
And I think they could have done better, at least in the first, even in the first movie, just to like set that up of mm-hmm. like.
Yeah. We ever like talked about her. I don't remember him, Stoic, ever talking about her.
No.
Well, and that's part of the thing, that while those two scenes were amazing.
Yeah.
I felt they left a lot on the table.
Yeah, they were in the middle of the film.
From getting us into that.
Yeah.
And then after that, because I mean they have the funeral scene once Stoic dies.
Yeah.
But there's never like a, hey, let's mom and son get together and have a heart to heart, or let's, you know, have some post movie where there's someone dealing with this. Like we are so emotionally invested in these two scenes, and then it just kind of like, well, we did that just so you'd be really sad when Stoic dies, you know, like unfortunately, it wasn't for the sake of the relationship. It was for the sake of killing him off and getting the viewer emotionally invested.
I thought we already had the Dark Night of the Soul.
We did.
Why are you bringing this back into
the movie? Anyway. I didn't like, I didn't like that they killed him. I didn't feel like it was a necessary, I feel like they could have made me care about that character and those relationships more without killing him.
Yeah.
Or with, they could have killed other people. But then it's cool.
Let all the let so Rough Nut die.
So many other people.
So many other characters could have bit it, and I'd have been like, "Cool." But that one, like, and more for me, just like the way that he dies, it's like not. I felt like it could have the death could have just been done better, and I think we're getting back into like reviewing the movie more. But I think that this gets to the heart of like whenever we talk about a movie being great, I think it's so funny. It's so rare that people trust opinions now about movies. They're like, that was a really good movie. Mm-hmm. For me, I rarely say great because I want like that to really mean something. I think that oftentimes whenever we talk about movies, we're just like, oh, this is so good. It was so good. This was not a great movie, but it is a really interesting story and a really beautifully told story in the sense of visually. I back off my come on moment of that being terrible.
That's all right.
But I'm also not married and didn't cry at either one of those moments. So there was no tears in my eyes during this movie. So
I
feel like it made me emotional. Sorry, Mikey. But I feel like it made me emotional not because of our marriage, but because of it reminded me of my relationship with God. Yeah. Like how God treats me as his bride. That's, I think, why it hit me so hard.
And you're thinking about how much I don't treat you like that, and you started crying because you're so sad. Like,
oh, yeah, stop it. Could be so much better. Stop it. Fishing. Fishing for compliments. She loves you, Mikey. I've heard.
Okay, so, well, final thoughts. Griffin, final thoughts on the movie?
Yeah, it was great, and I really liked it.
It was great? I thought you just said it wasn't great.
It's not great. Sorry. It was good. It was really good. I liked it. I am hopeful for another one, and I'm hopeful that they'll do better. I'm really glad that they got Yahtzee to do a song again. And for those of you who are like, who's Yahtzee? And what, all that really cool music at the very beginning of the movie and the very end of the movie, Yahtzee.
Done.
And he rarely makes music just by himself. It's usually with Sigur Rós. And so I love his stuff. And so for them to get him to do like songs for both their movies is really cool to me.
Hmm.
And so I always like that. And also, I was glad we stayed for the end because some of that like concept art was absolutely incredible. I was like, who is the artist? And that stuff is beautiful because I think that's whenever you get to the animated stuff, like the people who do it right.
No, I want to say that I'd almost forgot about that, but I was watching the credits and that concept art, and I was like, I wonder if I can buy these prints.
It's incredible.
They were so awesome.
I'm sure somewhere online. I mean, I'm sure the people, if you look up who's a concept artist, and I'm sure they sell it. But yeah, it was really cool. The concept art was, it was beautifully painted art of like exactly what we saw in the movie. And I think it's so interesting for me to see like them, it's painted what you saw digitally. And I was blown away by that. It was really cool.
Laura, final thoughts?
I am the best because I like this movie the best.
There you go. No arguments.
The end.
Well, like I said, I would also highly recommend the movie. I did enjoy it for all my critiques of it. So if for some reason you've lasted this long or you listened to this entire thing with lots of spoilers and haven't seen the movie yet, I would highly recommend. Yeah. I would highly recommend. I mean, if you know, you have nieces and nephews that haven't gone, take them. You know, if you have small children, family members, take them. If you have a girlfriend or boyfriend, take them. This is a really...
Or a really close guy friend?
Or, well, see, because you're like, do you have a really close dragon guy friend?
You're the one...
Take your dog. Take you your dog.
You and your dog.
You're the one being the proponent for guy love.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I regret that there's not more films where it can be two dudes and that doesn't have to be like a guy and his dog. Yeah, it's not Turner and Hooch.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
I think that's where, like, I always tell people, like, one of the best movies to come out in like the last 10 years is I Love You Man, because it really, for me, it got to that story like better than any movie for me has. And I think that even better than Sam and Frodo Man, I'm just like, I'm in for those guys. And like,
well, and that's
a more realistic picture of what it probably looks like.
Exactly. Right? Cause like, I'm not going to walk to Mordor and die with like,
for me,
sorry.
Wow.
She will. I will not.
Yeah, but she's a girl.
Yeah, but she loves you. I do too, just not like that. Carrying on. But yeah, I mean, like, I think it's more realistic of like how a bromance and like a really good bro friendship looks and it's not, and it doesn't turn to like, let's just get drunk and pick up chicks.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think so much of like best guy friends in movies, it becomes that, especially in comedy, it becomes that. It's like we get, you know,
you get close enough to make a joke.
Yeah.
Don't, like, you know, joke it before it gets uncomfortable.
Yeah, and for the I Love You Man, it's, like, very, like, they're very honest in front of each other, very real people. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, if you haven't seen the movie, please do. If you can't find it, once again, I'll offer this out to anybody. It's at my house. Come over and watch it. We'll hang out. We'll watch it together and create a bromance, and it'll be great. So,
well, I want to say that while I would also highly recommend I Love You Man for various reasons, it's probably not appropriate for...
Oh, not for kids.
All ages or certain dispositions of moviegoer.
Yeah, if you're not willing to sit through like some dirty jokes.
It has some rude moments.
Some very rude humor.
Rude humor.
It is not for...
Focus on the Family do this?
If someone would call you conservative, don't watch this movie.
If someone calls you, you should really watch this movie.
To break you out of that.
But, you know, just, you know, anyway, sensibilities, yeah. Understand where your weaknesses are.
Yeah, exactly.
And understand our recommendations go with all that. So, okay. Guest promotion. You guys are awesome. I'm so glad you made time to be here. Especially since we're not going to see you for like a week or so, Griffin.
It's going to be a couple, yeah.
But tell people how they can follow you or get a hold of you.
At @Griffin_Kale, @GRIFFIN_KLE. Pretty simple on Twitter and website.
Well, GriffinKale.com.
GriffinKale.com.
Stop playing video games.
It's not even that anymore. And at some point in the very real and near future, actually, that's kind of the great thing about moving or going away next week,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm moving at the end of July. There are a lot of things that I have in my inner workings that are working in my head that are on burners, kind of doing things. I've had a really hard time writing things for the public to view,
mm-hmm.
And so hopefully very soon I'll have something out back up on that. I've got an outline of a chapter, so
yes.
Hopefully that will be done next week, but we'll see depending on how much time I get with people around.
And I'm serious, one day in the future, all those people out there who enjoy Wes Anderson, who can't enjoy Wes Anderson as much as Griffin does, because I don't know if that's possible. Hopefully I'll actually get Griffin to have the time to review every Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, I
really love Wes
Anderson. Yeah, and that's whenever you said, I was actually hoping, whenever you said your 5-star movies from like in the last year, I was like, Grand Budapest, Short Term 12. That's literally, I mean, that's it for me. I mean, there are a lot of movies that I really loved, and I would say they were great, mm-hmm. like great movies, but those movies were perfect for me. Like, they did no wrong. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's where you can find me.
So, Laura?
@Laura_Fissel and LauraFissel.com.
You kind of trailed off there. LauraFissel.com?
LauraFissel.com, yeah.
Be confident in your website.
LauraFissel.com, yeah. You
if
can be
you
like me.
If you feel bad about your website, you can come look at my website, and you can be like, oh, I have way more than Laura does.
Oh, we're fine.
We're good.
I really like the, I just really like the visual of your website. It's really clean.
Yeah, part of that, I kind of feel bad about. I spent money on that and I haven't really used it since I only used it for like a couple months afterwards, and I just haven't been writing in a journal, which is growing great. There's a lot in there, but mm-hmm. none of you can see it.
No, so. It's okay. Like I said, you're making connections. People are interested in what you're doing. When you do finally put something out, you've already got a built-in audience.
Yeah, and that's the goal. And so, yeah, please follow and check in, and hopefully soon I'll have some email setup going on there, so you can, you know, just get an email whenever I post or do anything. That's my goal. So
yeah, well, and that's one of the things that we strive for here on the show. We don't have set panelists that we have every week, because I really want to expose people to as many creatives, thinkers, artists, moviegoers as possible, because there's a lot of great people out there who are really thinking about how they engage culture and how they view their faith. And so I really encourage that if you liked anything that you've heard, follow Laura, follow Griffin, follow all the guests that are on the show. They're all awesome and unique. And most importantly, continue to follow Real World Theology. I'm so thankful that you joined us this episode. And if you want to keep this discussion going or others, follow @Real World Theo. Follow me @Physification. And if you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, you're probably already going to realworldtheology.com. Yeah. Continue going there. Connect with us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you enjoy it, review the show. Leave us some feedback. Leave us 5-star reviews. It'll be great. It'll help our rankings. People will find us. We'll get more people involved in the conversation. I will shamelessly say your name and all the great things you say on this show, because I'm so grateful for every one of you who takes the time to listen. But to wrap up, I again thank my guests for being here. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Griffin.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, the listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless.
Bye-bye. Really? Is it really not really? Mindless?
Really?
Really?
You guys.
Now I want to watch that movie, and I want to watch Rescuers, and I want to watch Rescuers.
This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.